Yeah, and our expectations are very high. And I think that we really believe that this is a better way to develop technology, and that, you know, that the world will stand to gain when technology is shared.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, the show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. My guests know that whether it's having a meeting in a brew pub, riding with a client, or the special collaboration that goes on here, business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and subscriber info is available at proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. My guest today is Harris Kenny, president of Aleph Objects, the manufacturer of the Lulzbot 3D printers. It's a Colorado company with a unique twist. We're going to talk about that. And this company has exploded onto the Inc. Fastest Companies list. Harris will be back in a minute to join me. First, thanks to the show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of their keg distribution. Also, Community Banks of Colorado, they go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs in Colorado. In this episode, Harris Kenny, president of Aleph Objects. Welcome, Harris.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad you're here, and I'll share with listeners that Aleph Objects manufactures rapid prototyping 3D printers based in Colorado. Aleph is the number one fastest growing privately held U.S. computer hardware company, achieving almost 3,000% growth over 2 years and revenue approaching $20 million. Here's what we'll talk about. First, we're going to dive deep into the industry of 3D printing and all the opportunities around that. Then I want to talk a little bit about this notion of Libre innovation, the idea of providing open architecture software and open architecture hardware. What's that all about? Why would a company be that crazy to put all of its products into the public domain? So Harris, we're going to talk about that as well. And from my reading list, which you can find on proco360.com, I'll be playing an Audible clip from Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. And I'm going to put Harris on the spot for his thoughts about that. So that's how it's planned. We'll see how it goes. Let's jump in. So Harris, what is a Lulzbot printer?
Lulzbot printers are industrial grade, so they're very capable desktop machines. They work by basically taking a 3D model, a design, and converting that into a physical object by melting different types of plastics and materials and melting them like a glue gun and building them one layer at a time.
Yeah, really, really small layers slowly stacking over time, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw a video actually about somebody's producing lacrosse helmets now using your product. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. And so that's Cascade Lacrosse, which is sister companies with Easton Baseball and Bauer Hockey. So it's like it's a very big sporting goods company, but Cascade is using it to prototype helmet parts. And for them, their engineers have a few of our machines and they use them to prototype really quickly in-house. They're a U.S. manufacturer. They're in upstate New York and they're focused, they're customer obsessed. And so the faster they can come up with new ideas, test ideas, and get them to market, it helps them stay ahead. And they've been in business for 30 years.
And that's this whole idea of using 3D printing for prototyping. We're also going to talk about, as we go through this interview, I want to talk about how it's evolving from just prototyping into actual products that are being used every day. And I want to kind of do that by cascading maybe down this notion of the food chain of users of 3D printing. And when I was thinking about the interview, I'm thinking, you know, years ago, there was all this talk about sort of the paperless office and how that was all going to, and there was this futuristic notion that never evolved. And yet with 3D printing, right, there was this talk about how we're going to 3D print everything. And it actually is happening, isn't it?
There's adoption across every industry and in the classrooms, libraries, companies that you wouldn't expect, like marketing agencies that are doing custom campaigns. And so, yeah, the number of applications is really infinite. It's really anybody that's working with physical things, either as a manufacturer or maybe a small batch producer, prototyper, designer, engineer.
Well, you got my head spinning already thinking about like marketing agencies who want to create these unique items that they can just make three of to target, or one to target this specific account. I'm going to ask you for examples of that in a minute, but I want to back up to this food chain thing first. Let's talk about, I mean, this really started with hobbyists, didn't it?
Yes.
So take us, is that still being used? Are 3D printers still being used? Because your product is now what, $2,400 now for a hobbyist?
Yeah. So our prosumer machine is the Lulzbot Taz 3D printer. It's $2,500. And then our entry level machine is the Lulzbot Mini, which is $1,250.
I mean, it's almost as cheap as a paper printer.
Yeah. And it's comparable to kind of like computers. It's almost like getting a computer, kind of comparable price point. We sell through Amazon and Micro Center and Fry's Electronics. And so a lot of those places people are familiar with.
So what are you seeing hobbyists do?
Well, the desktop industry was really born out of hobbyists. A project called the RepRap Project about 10 years ago. A professor basically decided that he wanted to work on a machine that could self-replicate, a 3D printer that could self-replicate. Mm-hmm. And his name is Adrian Boyer, and he shared all the files. And then hobbyists got on board. And because of a lot of other technologies like the internet and computing and a lot of other things made this community possible. And out of that community spun a number of companies, including ours, who remain that philosophy of sharing. But then we, of course, have a price and we sell a product and right. We have employees and a manufacturing floor and everything like that.
Well, you've got hobbyists now, I would think, inventing parts to do something, right? And is that spurring a whole new group of entrepreneurs then? People who've invented things with a desktop printer now are becoming entrepreneurs with businesses?
Absolutely. We have a lot of customers that do crowdfunding campaigns on websites like CrowdSupply, where they'll use 3D printing as that essential way to build that minimum viable product, do their campaign, raise money, and then go into production. But increasingly, those same folks will then say, you know what, I can actually use the printer for production. I had in my original timeline that I was going to do injection molding and it's going to take up a few months, but I can actually sell this direct to consumer. An example of a company that spun out of some university students in North Dakota called Protosthetics. And if we have a case study about them on lulzbot.com. And this company basically is printing custom, they're working with orthopedists and they're developing custom prosthetics for leg amputees.
And each really one can innovative. Be different, right?
Yes.
Each one can fit the specific user based on whatever kind of measurements they put in, right?
Exactly. They're working with the doctors and they're using patient data and getting patient input and developing really cutting edge things. But they're using the same things that these hobbyist entrepreneurs are using when they're starting their own companies, or intrapreneurs, you know, the entrepreneurial people within big organizations are using 3D printing to get ideas moving faster.
So two things came to mind. One is that you mentioned things like Kickstarter campaigns or whatever, and the idea is, okay, you're going to produce a really lousy prototype, cheap, and you're going to use that to scale, right? But now these entrepreneurs can actually fulfill using 3D printing, right?
Yes, and we use our printers to produce our own machines. We have between 30 and 40 parts on each machine, and we've printed close to 2 million production-grade parts in ABS plastic, which is a very common plastic and used in consumer products and electronic products all the time.
Well, because that was sort of a knock on the early stage 3D printing, right? Well, you can make these products to see if they fit, but be gentle because they're going to break, right? That's not that way anymore, is it?
It's not, and part of it's hardware, but another part of it, another technology, is the materials.
Yeah.
So we support, because of our open source philosophy, we support over 30 different materials, and new materials are coming out, polycarbonate blends and nylons and heavy-duty materials that are enabling whole new applications. And instead of just maybe a cheap plastic that you might think of when you think of plastic.
So that's really sort of enabling this move from hobbyist / startup entrepreneur small scale to real industrial use of 3D printed parts, right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right.
So what are you seeing now in industrial application that you couldn't have seen 3 years ago?
A really exciting one we have write up on a white paper that some customers at NASA basically hacked one of our machines to print extremely high temperatures. And so they're printing in a material called PEI, which is like an aerospace grade plastic, polytheramide, that can withstand high temperatures. And so it's used in aerospace a lot. And so, an entry level, consumer level price point machine like ours, they hacked it. And for a few thousand dollars, they were printing something that normally you know, you'd need a much, much more expensive machine to print. So that's an example of some modification. They can do a lot off the shelf too, but there's also these other avenues that people can go down for unique applications.
So does that get rid of this proverbial, you know, $500 hammer, for example, right? Because now you have a design, you could just make it out of really high quality materials that are durable.
It opens up exactly the potential for, with 3D printing, the way it works, you can basically have each unit, your next unit costs the same amount.
Right.
Right. And right. So what that means is that it's really advantageous if you have a very low volume. Mm-hmm. Whereas in with a lot of traditional manufacturing techniques, you have to hit certain volumes in order to make the numbers work.
Yeah, but is this going to change things? I mean, I'm now hearing about factory floors that are covered with, and you have, how many do you have? 150
exactly,
printers, right?
Yeah.
3D printers?
Yep.
So you're almost mass producing.
Yeah.
You're mass producing one at a time. Is that, can you say that? I guess in your world you do now.
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's going to depend on the part and the material and the, you know, what the company's doing, but it's certainly possible we're doing it and we have customers that are doing it. Two companies that are doing this. One is Tapster Robotics in Chicago. They do a little robot that does mobile testing of phones and tablets and things like that. And they use 3D printing for their production. And another company is OpenBCI. They make brain computer interfaces.
Wow.
Yeah, they're really neat. They're in Brooklyn. They're a New York-based company, and they are using 3D printing for their production as well. And so these are really high-tech, solving really specific problems with 3D printing and creating a lot of value for their users.
That's pretty interesting. One of the directions I want to go before we're done here is to explore an intersection between 3D printing and Internet of Things. I want to talk about that in a minute. First, I want to remind the listeners that you're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and I'm speaking with Harris Kenny, president of Aleph Objects. As we talk about this evolution, a lot of it seems to be material-based, that as materials have gotten better for 3D printing, you've been able to achieve a lot greater things. Do you have to modify your product in order to accompany, to enable these materials to be used?
That's a great question, Dave. So the big thing that we focus on, we don't know what's going to come next. So we focus on headroom, right? Like we have a hot end, the part where the plastic melts, mm-hmm. that can go up to 300 degrees Celsius, which is very high. It's higher than almost every material on the market needs, but by giving that headroom, mm-hmm. it gives material developers room to then say, hey, we can do a little more. And same thing for the bed. Our heated bed goes up to 120 Celsius.
So you're not developing the materials. You're developing, as you called it, headroom, the capability for people who are working in the materials world to develop for you.
Exactly. And so we work with companies like Eastman Chemical Company, which is spun out of Eastman Kodak. They're a leader in copolyesters, for example. One of our material partners is Verbatim. So you've probably bought their CDs or USB thumb drives or any number of other products they make. And so, we as the open source hardware company, we are really well positioned to be a collaborator. They can come in, they see how the platform works, and they can develop for the technology. And so we're able to bring in new partners really quickly.
That's a whole different paradigm, the idea of having an open architecture, an open way to allow other entrepreneurs and other, whether it's chemists, whomever, to explore the opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that may be why you've created this open architecture. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. The number one motivator for us is the focus on user freedom. So when you're a user of our products, when you purchase our products, we respect your freedom to use it how you want, to make modifications, to learn how the product works. And there's a lot of benefits that, you used the word you used earlier, cascade out of that, including for material developers. It's easier for suppliers. They know our product, so they can bid on our business, for example.
Yeah.
Researchers that are doing really frontier applications where our printer is just a means to an end. They don't have to reverse engineer anything. They don't have to take anything apart. They can basically start at the starting line of the work they want to do instead of starting behind to try to understand what they're working with.
This is a really thought-provoking. As I sit here, I kind of want to think of a bunch of questions that aren't on my outline. This whole notion that really you're in business to create an opportunity for the 3D industry. And you're not really, the way it strikes me is you're not really in business solely to sell 3D printers. Am I on the right track here?
You're definitely on the right track. We're involved in a lot of projects that don't make us any money.
I'm not encouraging that. Did I mean to encourage that?
Well, we do, of course, sell printers. We've got payroll and production. We manufacture in Loveland. We've got about 150 employees. So we definitely are a business, you know, and we're focused on that and focused on growth and profitability. But we also recognize that there is a bigger picture and that we are uses our community, but we also intersect with a lot of other communities, including schools and universities. Hmm. We work with a lot of universities all along the Front Range that are in libraries and all sorts of different people. So we try to kind of see the bigger picture because our products are only possible because of all the work people have done before us and other communities like the Linux community and companies like Red Hat that we collaborate with. So
that's kind of a cool, I mean, you ultimately really have to live that with some level of integrity in order to have the whole community buy in and not think that you're going to pull the, I mean, we see this in other industries where we saw it with a photo bucket where, excuse me for giving them a call out, but you know, it was free. And all of a sudden then it became hundreds of dollars. And if your audience sees you as someone who's going to pull the rug out, that would cripple you, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, that is a very keen insight, and it's definitely true. And we're like, so we walk the walk so much. We run our whole company on open source and free software tools. So word processing, operating systems, our ERP system, all the tools we use are free software tools. Our computers are a company actually here in Denver called System 76. Mm-hmm. They make Linux desktops and laptops. We work with them a lot. So yeah, not only for our printers, but everything we do. And users expect a lot out of that. And it's a big promise to live up to. And we always try to do better.
So all your software is open source. In mm-hmm. fact, it really is crowdsourced almost, isn't it?
Certainly. I mean, some projects more than others, yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of participation from people.
And if anybody wants to see what's inside a Lulzbot, if mm-hmm. anybody wants to understand exactly what's there, all of that architecture is open as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have our R&D work is either published every 30 minutes or it's published instantaneously for software projects that are shared through another site.
You know, 10 years, even 2 years ago, people would have said you're crazy for opening this up. I mean, look at how long Apple fought against people being able to create whatever it is that would plug in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in hardware, historically, it's unusual, you know, but, you know, just looking kind of modern recent history. But the open hardware community is growing a lot. Mm. There's a group called the Open Source Hardware Association. They're going to have their summit in Denver this fall, and wow. I'm involved with that organization. There's a company called SparkFun yep. up outside of Boulder does Arduino projects. And so there is this kind of burgeoning, growing open source hardware business community and building on the work of and with hobbyists that you were talking about earlier.
That's pretty interesting. It'll be, as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, so they're going the exact opposite route of Apple. Hmm. Okay. It didn't work out too well for them though, did it? So...
Well, yeah, there's interesting examples.
But things change.
Yeah, if you look at like Android, for example, mm-hmm. right? So Google shared that. Now it's relatively open, and it's the number one mobile operating system on the market. 498 out of the top 500 supercomputers run Linux. So we look mm-hmm. at the example of openness succeeding in software, yeah. running stock exchanges and International Space Station and Fortune 500 airlines. We see the success in software, and then we believe kind of macro big trend is that those same benefits are going to yeah. be true in hardware as well.
So the world really is different. And to compare you to a hardware maker like an Apple when they started whatever 20, 30 years ago really is unfair because the world has changed to where crowdsourced software, and I mean expectations, abilities, communicate, it's all changed so much, right?
Yes, exactly. We think of ourselves more like a Wikipedia. Hmm. We kind of see ourselves more philosophically aligned with maybe Wikipedia or Red Hat or Mozilla.
Are your competitors like that, or do they think differently?
There's definitely a strong culture of openness in the 3D printing industry. Hmm. Some are not. Some have taken a very proprietary and closed approach, and there's definitely been mixed outcomes for some of those companies. Yeah. But overall, yeah. the spirit of the industry has remained open, which is exciting.
So thinking about the future... And Internet of Things is such an interesting world as well. The idea that everything's interconnected. I wonder, is there an intersection between 3D printing and Internet of Things? And could you print an Internet of Things enabled object with a chip embedded in it, for example?
The Internet of Things community and kind of business opportunity is growing really quickly. And 3D printing is a very good dovetail for that. Like the first thing that those electrical engineers are working with is printing enclosures. Mm. For their boards, for their sensors. And so actually SparkFun, who I mentioned earlier, and other resellers like Fry's Electronics and Micro Center, they're really good partners for us because they work with those electrical engineers and those developers who are trying to solve those specific problems. And so they get it. They get the things that our customers are trying to do.
Yeah. So give us a look into the future. What are some things that are hard to envision that are going to be made via 3D printing technology, hard to envision over the next 3 years, 5 years, and maybe even 20 years that are really going to happen?
I think that the biggest impact is going to come from products that we don't realize because people are going to use 3D printing to manufacture them.
But see, I'm asking you to tell us what we will see, right? So what are those?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be in industries where you haven't seen a lot of innovation. So like looking like the Tapster Robotics and OpenBCI are examples where it's not this really dynamic, competitive, lots of ideas, lots of sharing. You know, mobile automation testing and brain-computer interfaces, you know, those are not things that a lot of people have access to. And so I think looking at places where there's not a lot of access, and when some folks are going to come around and say, hey, we think we can do this differently, we think we can do this better. I think probably the one that you might be the most surprised at, but the one that's most interesting to me would be in aerospace. There's a community called the Libre Space Foundation, and they're working on a network of ground satellites that can basically communicate up to space. And they've done some really, really interesting work on you know, basically getting things up into orbit. And so I think there's a lot of benefit as the aerospace industry grows and the private aerospace industry grows. I think that's one. I think another, we'll see, it's pretty early days, but I think high-end photography equipment. There's a very interesting new company called Apertus. They're in Austria, and they have an open source hardware camera called Axiom. It's an open source hardware certified premium.
Can they print a lens?
So you can with some materials, yeah. And their camera runs Linux, so it's a super capable high-end camera. So those are two users we have right now who I would say are in pretty early days. I would say they're ahead. But I anticipate that they have a vision that's gonna get traction.
Now, as we step back to today's world and we look at sort of what's happening with the changes in the economy and how automation is displacing workers and so forth, it seems like 3D printing may do even more of that and change the way our worker training needs to be done, the way our workforce needs to be brought up to speed. What are you seeing as far as the impact on our whole sort of macroeconomic look?
Yeah, 3D printing in the places where it's really succeeding, it's being used as an extension of an engineer, of a designer. It's complementing some existing process. I mean, 3D printers are, they're very capable, but they can't do everything. There is sort of human input and ingenuity and design elements that go into that. So I think comfort using digital modeling and digital fabrication, those are education elements that are important. But I also think that it's a tool, it's a part of the tool chain. And so that's why we focus on reliability. We recognize that this is one part of many things that users are doing. And so it needs to be reliable. We never want to be that point of failure. We want to be that point of success.
Enabling, yeah.
Yeah.
So if there are listeners that are out there saying, I still don't really get this notion of 3D printing. Can you maybe run with a few, maybe three, four examples of 3D products that are being used in today's marketplace to really enable business?
Well, there are lots of different examples using different types of technologies. So just kind of taking a step back in 3D printing, one that is familiar with people would be like LASIK, or excuse me, not LASIK, Invisalign braces, so that would be one that's been used for a long time and people don't realize that.
Are those trays being made with 3D printers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But really, the reality is that almost every product that you use almost certainly had 3D printing used in the development of it. 3D printing has been around for a while. And with the increased ubiquity of desktop machines like ours, it's being used for the development of nearly every product. So I think that would be a big thing. And then just in your local library or hackerspace or school, you may not realize, but 3D printers are being adopted there.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the education market and
in high schools as well?
High school, junior highs? Middle school, elementary school, robotics programs, STEM programs. A customer on lulzbot.com, we've got a case study of a customer in Houston who teaches a bilingual courses and used 3D printing to basically print out consonants and syllables and is having the kids learn language through physical touch, and they're also learning digital skills.
What a great overlapping kind of set, and a great way to engage kids in learning. It's a lot more fun to print your own alphabet, I suppose, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
How cool is that? Hey, as a reminder, you're listening to ProCode 360's Pro Business Colorado, the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and I'm speaking with Harris Kenny, president of Aleph Objects based in Loveland. Let's talk about this notion of, we got a few minutes left. I want to talk about the growth of Aleph Objects. And it's been huge, right? I mean, 3,000% almost the last 2 years, right? How do you deal with that?
Growth is a big challenge for any company. And for us, we have the added complexity of being a manufacturer. So we manufacture in Loveland. We've got a full production floor. Our production runs 7 days a week. Our cluster of printers is running 24/7 making parts for more Lulzbot 3D printers.
They're self-replicating. It sounds like a scary movie almost.
Yeah. Yeah, they are self-replicating. And of course, there's people running those machines.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, supply chain complexity and, you know, growing in our facilities and hiring the right folks and finding the right people to kind of help us solve problems and finding good business partners. There's lots of components to it. But I think the big thing is trying to just keep a pace and focus on our customers and listen as best we can to our customers to make sure that we're solving their problems. And by doing that, we've been successful.
That's cool. And I think back on when I had my own business and it was growing really fast. And boy, if you ask my wife, she'll tell you that my ego grew as fast as the business. So I want to play a clip and I want to ask you a little bit about this notion of running a business that's explosive. Luke, would you play the clip? This is from Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday.
Franklin quickly illustrated just how ridiculously inflated his young ego had become. Chatting with Mather as they walked down a hallway, Mather suddenly admonished him, "Stoop, stoop." Too caught up in his performance, Franklin walked right into a low ceiling beam. Mather's response was perfect. "Let this be a caution to you not always to hold your head so high," he said wryly. "Stoop, young man, stoop, as you go through this world, and you will miss many hard thumps."
So what do you think? When you're growing at 3,000% over 2 years, how do you remember to stoop?
Well, we have a lot that keeps us humble. I mean, a lot, you know, challenges come up where, you know, supply chain mistakes happen. Every business has challenges. So, and I would say growth probably accentuates those challenges. I think the complexity of having software development and hardware development and manufacturing and having customers in 85 countries and all the logistics that go along with that and packaging and compliance testing, I would say, you know, we have enough going on any given day to kind of help us remember that we, you know, we're not batting 1,000, but we're doing our best.
I suppose, you know, an endless supply of hard work probably is distracting itself away from being an egomaniac.
Yeah. And our expectations are very high. And I think that we really believe that this is a better way to develop technology and that, you know, that the world will stand to gain when technology is shared. And so I think our expectations are very high for the company to succeed. Yeah. and for us to make those contributions. And so I think there's a between that and then just the everyday challenges, those things I think keep us nose to the grindstone.
Yeah, that's cool. So I know you've made mistakes. Everybody does. When you think back on the last several years of your career, it's been my experience that I learned the most from the worst mistakes. Can you think of an example of a mistake that now you think of and you integrate into how you run your life now at work?
I think the biggest challenge, so I started in the role as president in January this year, and we had a lot of, we had grown a lot. And so there were some things that we were ready to kind of be taken up from, we had developed previously over the previous 2 or 3 years, and then we were ready to kind of bring them up, bring those forward. And a lot of those involved, you know, promoting people into new roles and giving them more room to make decisions and giving them more autonomy and rewriting their job description to reflect how much work they're really doing. But all those personnel, you know, things that it took time. I think I didn't appreciate how much time it would take to kind of get folks in the right spots and put them in that position to succeed. And so I think people are complicated and there wasn't any specific problem, but just in general that none of that stuff happens right away.
Well, and when you're doing that kind of work, it doesn't really feel like you're accomplishing your core mission, does it?
Yeah, it's a means to that
growth.
Yeah,
but it's hard to get fired up writing job descriptions. It's hard to, you know, you're not like serving the greater good of the world when you're writing job descriptions, right?
Yeah, it's definitely sort of a blocking and tackling type of activity where you got to do it, but it's important. And it's definitely not going to be the highlight, I don't think, of any given day.
Yeah, but you're right. It does have to be done. And you and I shared before we started the interview, you like to read, I like to listen to Audible. What's a book that you've read in the last year or so that really you feel like you want to share because it's had a big impact on the way you run your life?
Well, my favorite book, I reread it pretty regularly, is Candide by Voltaire. It's a classic, but I just like the idea of the sort of the persistence and then also recognizing that, you know, things aren't going to always go the way we think they will. And so we tend our garden, we focus on sort of what we can do as best we can do it and just try to like take that one day at a time. But that's sort of more of a personal mantra. That's not really a company thing.
Well, but you know, you're the president of the company, and I suppose that's the kind of thing you want to wear in your sleeve, right? As you run the business?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, that's a good way to wrap up, I think, today on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I've been speaking with Harris Kenny, president of Aleph Objects, an Inc. 500 manufacturer of rapid prototyping 3D printers based in Loveland, Colorado. We talked about the 3D printing industry and how Aleph Objects has built its business on open architecture, both hardware and software. And we talked a lot about the whole 3D printing world. And let me ask you one last question, because you're a Colorado-based company, and you've got this whole open architecture mindset. How does Colorado dovetail in with the way you think about business?
Well, the Colorado business community has been critical to our success. We work with all sorts of suppliers up and down the Front Range, companies that I mentioned before, like SparkFun and System 76. There is just a sort of a natural, I think, collaborative spirit to the companies here, whether they're open source companies or not. And I think that has been really essential. And honestly, people love working here or living here, and therefore it's easier to get people to come work here. So that is part of it too.
So recruiting talent,
it's a good place to live.
Excellent. Well, Harris, thank you for joining me on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. Great job.
Thank you.
This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com. Go there to subscribe. Again, that's ProCo360.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.